Discoveries goes avant-garde. Guard. Well, that theme music does indeed let us all know it is time for Classical Discoveries Goes Avant-Garde. I am your host, Marvin Rosen, and will be with you today until 1 p.m. In fact, I'm with you every Wednesday between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. for this program. For the duration of today's show, I am being joined by American composer Robert Moran, whose music we continue with right now. Thank you. You were just listening to Lithuanian Spin from The Three Dances by my guest Robert Moran. The music dating from 1983 was performed by Piano Circus. Now, Robert, what was Lithuanian about that?
Well, I'll tell you. Absolutely nothing.
Well, you asked
and
a
I will
simple
explain
question,
why
you get a simple answer.
Yeah. Here's the problem. You know, you write a piece of music, that's easy. Finding the right title, finding a title, that's the hard part for me. So I rack my brain over titles. And so it sounded to me like it might as well be Lithuanian Spin as anything else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it really did spin.
It really spins, doesn't it?
It really did. As you said, it's Bob Goes Rock and Roll.
It goes, yeah, it's a kicker.
It's a kicker. But I mean this whole issue with titles. I know, in fact, somebody right now, you know, recently who was thinking of a title for a piece, and that was such an issue. The piece was written.
Yeah, the piece is written and you don't have a title. He said, uh-oh.
Yeah, so...
So I write down titles, and then I have, then I've got the titles, and now I have to write pieces.
Yeah, so that
I got
works,
one
yeah.
called A Stitch in Time, which doesn't make much sense to me. I've tried to figure out what a stitch in time. But that seems like a nice title, doesn't it?
Yeah, A Stitch in Time.
Yeah.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
Well.
You want to commission it?
A Stitch in Time. A stitch. Let's see what that could be. A stitch. It could be one of those 30-second pieces. A stitch in
I see. You're going to pay me by the second.
I'm going to pay you by the second. and my work, my commissions are cheap labor.
Oh, I see. Oh. Okay.
Robert, let's go on now to some of your very early music.
Very early music.
Yeah, we're going to go to a recent CD on the Interval label titled Cabinet of Curiosities. We listened to Interiors 2, Uncharted Lands. This is from 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the selections on this new Innova disc employ graphic notation.
Mm-hmm.
When did you begin using graphic notation and why?
Actually, I think we've already been over this today. It was in 1963 where I went, returned to Vienna after studying with Berio and Mio and had done proportional notation. And then I decided that, well, the next step into that would be graphic notation. So these really look more like a Paul Klee painting.
Yeah.
You know, painting of Paul Klee. And, you know, he was a musician also.
Yeah.
So I look at those and I say we could take a Paul Klee and make it into music by following our own specific decisions. And that's what these are, the graphic notation is.
Now, let's go into the piece we're going to hear. Kind of, I guess, notation that you used in this and about the work itself. Tell us more about what we're going to hear.
Well, it's a piece that is, you know, what is it in the Renaissance period where if you were invited to a party, you took your instrument or you were a singer or your wife was taking her thorbo or whatever, and everyone would sit around making music.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depended upon what you had that evening at the party was the sound of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that should be, you know, we have that in jazz.
Sure,
why don't
we
have it in contemporary music? We've already had it in Renaissance music. So let's do that. So I wrote these pieces, the graphic notation, unless I specify, as in the four visions for string quartet, flute and harp, that's specifically that sound I thought of. But in this case with these, and the other one was Elegant Journey with Stopping Points of Interest, that was the graphic score, which I gave to Mr. Mio for his birthday. And that title was my construction of what I thought his life had been up to that point. So, making any sense?
Yeah, it does, actually.
So then I've heard, you know, from the folks there in Iowa at the University of Iowa, Dan Moore and his amazing ensemble, they wanted to do a lot of these. And I said, well, you know, it's open instrumentation, so do your thing. And that's what we have here.
So is this more of almost like a realization, would you say?
It's a realization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to say this is totally different than anything of yours we've heard up till now, this work. And we're going backwards
mm-hmm.
in time. And this is so true. You know, you go back in music to this era when things were, you know, the avant-garde were in inflection.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the Requiem, what we just heard a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that you know, stylistically, you've been moving with the times, I guess you could say.
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm just, as I told Judah, it certainly is a lot of fun being a paranoid schizophrenic because there are surprises everywhere.
Yeah, there are. There sure are.
And the piece that came after the Rec Room was written like 2 days after I finished Alice and sent the score off to Glasgow. Yeah. I started the Rec Room.
Yeah.
And at that time, Rupert Huber, who is a big conductor of West German radio choruses, and came to visit me in Philadelphia and said, I want to commission a piece for the Ruhr Triennale. And that's the next piece we can talk about because it's a huge piece.
Okay.
Double chorus.
And I promise we will do that.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to some of this percussion music by my guest, Robert Moran. Thank you. You were just listening to music by my guest, Robert Moran. That was an early composition. You were listening to Interiors 2, Uncharted Lands, dating from 1964. In our performance, you heard Iowa Percussion, along with Dan Moore. And that was from a brand new Innova compact disc. WPRB wants you to know that Women's Space Incorporated, a nonprofit organization serving women in crisis, has safe temporary emergency housing for women who have been physically or emotionally abused and their children. For more information, call Women's Space at 609-394-0136. Again, that's 609-394-0136. Or go to www.womenspace.org. If you have been abused and need shelter, call the 24-hour hotline at 609-394-9000. This has been a public service announcement from WPRB Princeton, community-supported independent radio, where I am being joined up until 1 o'clock by American composer Robert Moran for, I think this might be like your fifth visit to this program.
I think it's been more than that.
Has it been that?
Yes, I think so.
Gosh, it's been a number. I think you're the biggest veteran of this program.
Right, yeah.
And it's great to have you here.
It's always great to be here.
We have a lot of fun when you come. And you had an exciting work you were starting to discuss before
right
we played that.
Right after the Requiem.
Right. So why don't you take over and share with us about
that? I was mentioning that Rupert Huber, who conducts the West German Radio Chorus, and used to conduct the choruses at all the Salzburg Festival events, flew with his wife to visit me in Philadelphia. And I thought that was a little like, well, why don't you fly me there? It would be cheaper. One person going, yeah. But they arrived here, and I said, this is very interesting. And he said, I want to commission a new piece. We're doing my chorus from the Ruhr Valley, Dusseldorf area. We'll be doing a big John Cage piece, songbooks. And we're doing it in this, the Ruhr Valley, the Ruhr Triennale.
Mm-hmm.
This is so amazing, Marvin. This is the difference between that government and our government. When that area of the Ruhr, which you know is very industrial, a lot of it went financially belly up, if you can imagine German industry going belly up.
Yeah.
And they had gigantic spaces, industrial halls, and that were now derelict. They were empty.
Yeah.
They had a gasometer, I guess, for storing gas, which was so huge inside that it had a 20-second decay. That's big.
Yeah, sure.
So what did the German government say? Well, not like ours. Why don't we turn it over to make it into a big arts festival?
Wow,
can be used by all different types of music, from invited bluegrass to the most experimental dance people. And, of course, these spaces are perfect for light installations. So I've just seen photographs of light installations, and they're just blows your mind, really, quite honestly. It's just amazing. Now the festival is the top music festival in Germany today. Just by their thinking this is the right thing to do.
This is it is different. Then.
Which means, it's sold out. Tickets are selling. It's going to, and this, it's very interesting because the German director, Willy Decker, who just did the Traviata at the Met, is opening up, and he's been at it for 3 years. It's very interesting how this works, and I agree with it completely. I think other organizations around this country ought to consider this. You get the position of this big festival for 3 years. You have 3 years. At the end of 3 years, you're out. They bring in the new, next well-known person, whatever, whomever it may be. Mm. And Decker is this famous German regisseur for theater and opera, particularly opera. So he started out his first season doing anything dealing with Christianity. I mean, very strange early stuff. And the next year was Islam, Islamic. So that anything, I mean, avant-garde artwork and whatever, this is. And this year it's Buddhism. So we've got Schopenhauer and we've got all that. He's opening up with this festival with Tristan, his new production, Tristan. So I would love to see that because it's going to be startling and wonderful to see. And Rupert said, do you have any ideas? Mm-hmm. And I said, look, Rupert, as you know, Wagner, in early part of his life, wanted to write an opera on the life of Buddha. There's nothing crazier, nothing more insane to me than the late Romantic composer, Sturm und Stress, Sturm und Drang, writing on Buddha, who is like contemplative and spaced, right? Mm-hmm. So I would like to write a piece called Buddha Goes to Bayreuth. And we'll find mantras, whatever will be effective. And he said, I can give you my chorus. We can divide it in half. And I said, we do it in the gasometer, which is like gigantic space, with two separate choruses and two separate string orchestras. And I decided that I would, since we're dealing with Buddha and we're dealing with Wagner's original idea of Buddha, I would use John Cage's, the I Ching that he gave me back in 63. And I would rework all of the material that I'm going to use for this Buddha. So I decided, well, since we don't have any Buddha opera by Wagner, I'll take Parzival. And I went through the full orchestral score and took out my favorite chords, these amazing things that just sit there and they just radiate beauty.
Yeah.
And I took those out, and then I wrote them all down, and then I applied the I Ching, the ancient Chinese book of consultation of oracles, on who's singing what, who is, are there strings, the whole, all the parameters, and how it moves, and it's about 40 minutes long, this piece.
And when is it going to be?
October 1st and 2nd, along with the songbooks of Cage.
Wow.
So you get that in the space. It's almost, I've just told yesterday, been told that it's almost sold out, the two concerts. So.
Wow, this is exciting.
Yeah, so that's
this is going to be big event.
It's big, and I'm happy we've got at least 3 days rehearsals within the gasometer, because none of us know exactly how the sounds are going to work. So we're going to get in there. And that's the luxury of it, isn't it? Having that time.
Yes, all that time.
And the string orchestra is brought in from Hamburg. So that's the string orchestra from, hotel rooms, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And so they are there. Everyone's there, and they all have the music. And so Rupert's very excited about this. And out of that comes the 2012, the next year, is the 100th anniversary of Cage.
I know that.
Yeah. And he's doing the concert for piano and orchestra. I have the original. I have the manuscript
have,
of that.
Yeah.
And have performed it. And then he's asked me to write a new piece, a sort of tribute to Cage.
Wow. Did you know John Cage?
Very well. 30 years.
You did?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very good. Yeah, I met him a couple of times. And I remember the first time I met him, it was in Town Hall. It was a concert. I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to have him sign a book of his. And he signed it, instead of signing it like it where it's clear, he signed it over his name.
Oh, really?
He didn't sign it like a traditional way you would do it. And I personally think Cage is a very innovative composer, and he's a philosopher, everything. He's said a lot of interesting stuff and a lot of things that make people look at music in a different way.
Absolutely.
So this is 2012. Yeah, this is something I've already thought about.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Robert, we're going to get to more of your music in just a little while. We'll be listening to your Open Veins, a really cool piece.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But before we do that, let's move to another topic, totally unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, this is all very sad. You are a resident of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Your city's main orchestra, the Philadelphia Orchestra, of course, just a few weeks ago announced the decision by its board of directors to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Why, in your opinion, did this happen, and do you have any thoughts as to how this could have been prevented?
Well, the answer to that one is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do have.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know where to start with this and try to remain calm, because it's such a sad situation.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
But when I moved down to Philadelphia from New York City, mm-hmm. the last week of 1984. And when I arrived here, friends told me, friends who are involved in contemporary music said, I suppose you've heard about this new commissioning situation for new music is sponsored by the Philadelphia Orchestra and into whose hands it's fallen. And I said, I know nothing about it. Just tell me about it. So I was told that Mr. Maestro Muti, who, as you know, knows, I think his contemporary music information comes up to Ravel's Bolero. I think it goes about that far.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to look square. So he decided, and I should backtrack on this a little bit and say, this is what was told me, but recently, I should say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I don't know when Simon Wood ran the managerial portion of the Philadelphia Orchestra, mm-hmm. but I was invited out since he was a friend of Philip Blackburn's, and he was there. He's British.
Yeah.
And we went out and had brunch, the three of us. And during this, he turned to Philip and he said, do you know the history of this tragic situation of the Philadelphia Orchestra? And Philip said, no. And he said, Robert, do you know about it? And I said, well, I've heard things about it, but I would greatly appreciate, since you have had full view of this, if you could verify, yeah. just fill it in. And it was exactly what I'd heard. And what had happened was in giving over the reins of new music and endless amounts of money for commissions, mm-hmm. they gave it over all the power, selection of composers, grants, commissions, mm-hmm. to a local composer an academic, and I right. stress academic, because mm-hmm. those are the people who function within academia and mm-hmm. never get outside mm-hmm. of their own.
Yeah, 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 I know.
Ivory towers.
Yeah, I know what you're talking.
Yeah, yeah. And they just breed new students who become academics.
Like them, yeah.
So, but I've always said, I think that's great because it keeps them there and keeps them off the streets. But in this case, all of a sudden, here was a situation of a local, and I emphasize local, composer of academia, University of Pennsylvania, who mm-hmm. was now able to give out endless commissions of new pieces. You think, well, that's great. It's not, because he gave them out to his friends, mm-hmm. all academics. One of them, and I won't mention any names.
No names. No.
But it was a piece that the orchestra refused to play. They said it was scheduled 4 different times, mm-hmm. and they said they would not do it 4 different times. Hmm. Now, I have a number of friends who've given up their subscriptions to the symphony. And I said, why have you done that? And they said, it's very simple. Every concert, every year, every season, we were bombarded with hideous new pieces. There was nothing that was of any redeeming quality at all. And we turned it in along, you know, our subscriptions, and we're not going back.
And once you lose people, of course.
When you lose them.
It's yeah. hard to get them back.
And then Simon Wood said, and our complete, over a period of, 12, 15 years, yeah. our complete subscription base was destroyed. Now, the last thing we need to do is introduce bad new music. That's what happened. And these are the results.
Yeah.
There are other problems we know. We know yeah. the climate, the financial climate. Yeah. We know the payments of
the
union.
Ticket price, all that stuff.
All of that,
yeah,
we know that. We know that. But when you destroy your foundation, as was explained to me by various people, including one of the big shots at the symphony, I think that clarifies it. It's very sad.
And you know what that does, too? As a person who does hear what I do week after week after mm-hmm. week, it's very sad because people, your subscription audiences, are getting the wrong feeling of what new music is all about.
Of course.
And that's hurting the whole everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and this is what I was talking with Judah just a couple of hours ago, is that musically, I feel we are living in one of the most exciting times ever because there's something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And... Mm-hmm. And I feel, you know, that that this is something very sad with new music. And I also want to point out one other thing, too, is that when I think it was at the new millennium when they did this whole thing of just music of the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
I mean, mostly everything was very safe, too, mm-hmm. when there could have been new things that audiences could have enjoyed a lot. Why don't we say there was some, but more than could have
yeah.
happened.
And now
happened.
I would like to switch gears
slightly. Sure.
I know rather well David Gonkley. Mm-hmm. David Gonkley was the driving force of Houston Grand Opera for what? Almost 30 years. He's now there in San Francisco mm-hmm. as head of the San Francisco Opera. David arrived there and said, we're going to do at least one new opera commission a year.
Mm-hmm.
It went from everything from Nixon in China was started there,
yeah.
John Adams. He had Bernstein's. He had Tippett.
Yeah.
I've had three of my works
you had,
there,
sure.
three. Phil Glass had two or three with Juniper Tree. And he said to people, to the board, and this is Houston. We're talking about oil money people. I mean, we're, you know, this is not mm-hmm. fancy new East Coast people. This is New England. This is not that. This is Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
And he said, and they're doing Lulu before it ever hit any other place. They're doing Wozzeck. They're doing, you know, amazing and besides the commissions.
Mm.
And he said, you know, it's sort of like, it's like taking your medicine. You don't like it. But then after a while, you realize that it's helping you. And actually, you're building up this wonderful interest and curiosity for new works.
That's right.
And that's what happened with Houston. And if it wasn't a new opera, it was Parzival by Wagner, directed by Robert Wilson. So you were getting from all angles
yeah.
new ways of looking. It can be done. It was not done here, and it's failed miserably.
That's horrible. That's
it's sad, isn't it?
It's gloom and doom. Yeah. It's horrible. And, okay. and what, you know, like I say, you know, the whole problem is that that's just one element of new music today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and because you're here, my guest right now, I'm thinking about what you're saying and the academia, you know, the kind of music. And I think of the Requiem. The excerpt we just heard. That's new music,
mm-hmm.
new music.
Mm-hmm.
I think about excerpts from Desert of Roses. That's new music. And this is new music to get people interested in something new. It's sad. Very sad.
Yeah.
And
we can just hope for the best. You've had a few other men and women composers on this show who are also close up looking at the situation.
Yeah.
And they also say, it's very sad, and we just only hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That's really true. And there's so many things that they could do in terms of, I mean, they could do some things kind of like on the line of what's done in New York with some of these concerts of new music much more. I mean, there are things that can happen.
Yeah.
And try to get possibly more younger people that are going to help continue the tradition.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think we're going to change gears now and try to smile and something upbeat and cool of yours, Robert. How does that sound?
Well, let's go for it.
Open veins.
Open veins.
This is a wonderful piece for amplified violin and variable chamber ensemble. Now, what variable chamber ensemble? Explain that a little bit and about the title.
Well, that's
the
we're
work
back
itself.
To the Renaissance
yeah.
thing. Where this
yeah.
is really sort of a real graph. The score
yeah,
is a real. Said. It's not. It's very specific for all performers, whatever, whomever they may be. And this is a lot of brass and some synthesizers in there. And the title, I think, is I should explain the title because this is really party music, dangerous party music.
I like that.
Because Open Veins, because I based it upon, I just finished reading the Satyricon, the original Satyricon by Petronius. And as you know, he lived at the time with Nero, and it was all politics there at that time. And at some point, I guess he had gotten really a little out of control, or he'd written some things that came too close to the ruling factors. And it was suggested that he commit suicide. And by then, you did that by opening your veins. So what he did was he threw a party. This is documented. He threw a casual party, and where they had frivolous poetry and music, and everyone was drinking. Prior to that, he had opened his veins in his wrists and wrapped his wrists up in some beautiful, I don't know whether silk, God knows what. So there he was, proceeding to have this party, and everyone knew what was happening. Then they all said goodnight, lovely party, you know, and he sat down and he wrote on papyrus or whatever you did at that time, the list of all the sins and outrages of Nero. Copies, he made like 10 copies, had them rolled up, sealed with wax, and dispatched, and then went to bed. So I thought, wow, that sounds like that's a major party.
It is.
Yeah, it's a major party.
Top notch.
Top notch party.
Top notch.
Yeah, how does the send-off party ever. So I decided it's time to, let's call it Open Veins, and that's the music.
Well, we're going to hear this now. We hear violinist Alexander Balinescu along with the piano Circus Band. We listen to Open Veins of Robert Moran, and this is from an Innova compact disc, another one. Thank you.
Thank you.
You were just listening to music by my guest, Robert Moran. That was Open Veins, as performed by violinist Alexander Balanescu, along with the Piano Circus Band, an Innova compact disc. Robert, you have how many discs on the Innova label now?
I don't know. I think about three.
I think it's three, and some great work and a large variety of music.